Alright, welcome members. We are plugged in and ready to rumble. You're listening to the Crass Files podcast with Adam. It's Monday the 30th of December 2019. We are still in 2019, unbelievable. New Year's Eve tomorrow night, and wow, the fireworks are going to be exploding in the sky and blowing people's imaginations wide open. But good to have the members on board. Thanks for your support. Great to be here. Thanks for listening as always.
No heart to break, but now you take my hand and you make me understand the two dreams can join together. It's morning, and as I wake, I see your eyes. They are my reason.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, I mean, I'm not a party pooper or anything like that. I mean, I just don't get the fireworks. Personally, I don't understand them. I went a couple of years ago just around where I live, and there was just seemed like thousands and thousands of people going to this to see these explosions in the sky. I just found it so bizarre. I found it really boring. The people were just carrying on and exaggerating, and I guess they really love it. But the fireworks are going to be going off in Sydney tomorrow night, so it should be a big one. And what a year it's been. So much as always to cover, but it's good to be here. As I said, just starting their big changes on my website this year, and had a members area started there, so it's great to have you guys on board and helping me out. It really helps with that little bit of support coming in from all the members each month. I really appreciate that and hope we can continue into the next year, 2020, as things get stranger. Because that's what's happening, isn't it? Things are getting stranger and stranger as we go on and move forward. Isn't that true? I guess it just depends on how you look at things. I try not to take things too seriously at this stage. Moving forward, I try to just analyze everything and work out everything, work out what's going on around me and see if I can make sense of all this and move forward in a positive manner, because the world around me is just bizarre. It's like I'm living in some bizarre comedy, some bizarre episode of the Twilight Zone. It's really crazy, but what's going to happen next year? We'll see how we go. Crazy stuff. Anyway, just recently, over the last week, we were away, did a trip to northern Queensland, up to Cairns area. For folks overseas, this is the tropics. Up there near the Great Barrier Reef and the Daintree Rainforest, all of this, a magnificent part of the world, man. Jeez, I've been up there a couple of times, but I tell you, it's just absolutely magnificent up there. It is warm and humid, but beautiful green tropical climate. Just the smell of the flowers and trees in the air, and magnificent place. We haven't been on a holiday for so long now, so it was good to get up there away from the fires in Sydney. And it's the off season up there now in northern Queensland. But had, you know, beautiful days, hot days, you know, lots of sun, storms, downpours. Really magnificent part of the world, you know, and seeing those rainforests. Absolutely incredible area for sure. So I had a good time. I think it is, it absolutely is stinger season up there now. And it's pretty frightening, actually. You know, you don't want to swim on the coast there. And even out in the Whitsundays, or even parts around the Barrier Reef or some of the touristic sort of islands, there actually has been stings from these jellyfish. We get these jellyfish in Australia and in big numbers, and they come in especially on the coast with the nor'easterly winds. And it's so hot and humid up there, and you go along the coast, you go up to Port Douglas, or you go down to down the coast from Cairns, Mission Beach way, and you just got this really wild, untouched, unbelievably beautiful and scenic coastlines with huge mountains and you know, coconut trees on the right on the beach, and just absolutely wonderful. And you got this beautiful sparkling sea there, but you wouldn't really want to swim, not in the in the summer months, about 6 months now of the year, because there are jellyfish stingers, box jellyfish, and little jellyfish, little irukandji jellyfish, which could possibly be the most deadliest creature on earth, from what I've looked at. This thing is a little miniature jellyfish about the size of about the size of your thumbnail. And so even at the beaches with the lifesavers there in the summer, they open the little, they do checks, and they have like stinging nets. But these nets are so old school. I was talking with a lifeguard there. They're just more to protect from the box jellyfish, which is a big, huge, ugly motherfucker with a lot of tentacles on it. And when that stings you, you could pretty much die. Intense agony for sure. But the little irukandji jellyfish are only the size of your thumbnail. They can pass right through the nets there. And the water, you know, because it's so, the water was like hot soup. You know, I've never had such warm water. It was really incredible. And being so hot outside and steamy and sweaty, and you go into the water, it's like hot soup sometimes. So it's not really worth taking the risk, to be honest. But I was I was interested in these little jellyfish. I think it's pretty incredible, and they seem to be extraordinarily dangerous, and there's a lot of stings happening around Australia with these things. And they also seem to be moving south, down in Queensland, which is going to be a bit of a worry for the tourism industry. Looking at the people who have been stung by things, these things, there's been a few deaths as well. It's evidently just incredible, agonizing pain. I mean, the worst pain that you can ever feel. And so there's articles here, you know, a sting from this tiny little jellyfish will make you beg for death. So you know what I mean. So I did swim in the stinger nets up there at the beach, just traveling along. I did get stung by something actually, but it was okay. But the worrying thing about this irukandji stinger, this little box jellyfish species in Queensland, is that the initial sting, I mean, the things are so tiny you can't see them. They're completely see through. You know, they're barely the size of a thumbnail, and they can pass straight through the stinger nets up there. Without even touching the sides. But if you get dashed by one of these, there isn't any initial pain, evenly. It's more like a little bit of a zap, or maybe a mosquito bite. A lot of people say that. It's like you got pricked by a mosquito or something like that. And then the sensation of pain starts to build around 5 to 10 minutes, but there can be a delayed reaction, which is a bit scary. And some people don't even know they've been stung. So in Australia, there's been quite a few drowning deaths where people have been snorkeling and they may have been stung by these things and not even known. And a lot of people are being stung even with full-body stinger suits on. They go out snorkeling around the reefs or whatever, and they wear the full stinger suit. And a lot of people have been just stung on the top of the jaw or around the top of the neck there. And a lot of people have been stung and don't know that they've been stung, because there's no feeling of being stung by these things. You don't feel anything. You don't even know. It's just 5-10 minutes later you start to feel sick. And then you get all this horrendous pain, and this pain, it just builds and builds until it just goes through the roof. There's nothing that modern medicine can do to help you. There's no cure. There's no pain management for these things. Evidently, it's just absolutely horrible, the pain. And so even in these stingers' nets, You know, and I was asking the lifeguard, I'm wondering why in 2020 next year, why they don't have kind of different mesh stinger nets now. New technology that don't allow these stingers to pass through so people can swim at the beach up there more often. But I wouldn't take the risk after being up there. I just wouldn't take the risk. The waves and the beaches are beautiful and it's so hot you just want to jump in. But I'd go to the pool. Something like that, I wouldn't go in because these things are so tiny and they can sting you. And as I said, there's sometimes no initial feeling until later, a little bit later. So it's a delayed reaction, which is really scary because in Sydney you get blue bottles and stingers in the summer with the nor'easterly winds come in and they're blue and they're painful, man. It's agony, it really is. And when one of these sting you on the toe or on your arm or something, the initial pain straight away is bad. I mean, you know you've been stung. These things, some people don't even feel the sting going in and they don't know they've been stung. And so that's what I'm talking about. There's been these suspicious drowning kind of deaths where they've put it down to people drowning or having accidents, and they're saying, is it this silent killer where they're being stung by these things and then dying out there in the water? Because they're so severe. I got a little bit of a clip here of guys just trying to catch them on a documentary, and he's asking a guy about the pain here.
But that burnt. But making the sort of the conceptual jump between that and somebody dead, how does the venom actually work?
Well, you've got to remember first up that the venom is a component of several different things. So what you got was the localised pain, which was destruction of cells. So nerve pain there at that point. What will also have happened is another component will have been deposited directly into your circulatory system, in other words, your veins and arteries, and that would have gone straight to your heart. A big box jellyfish, you stung, it hurts immediately. It's like a red-hot knife dragged across your skin. So zero being no pain, 10 the worst you can imagine. My last trip, I had it about 14. And if someone had handed me a loaded gun, I was off the planet. It's this pain, it comes in, and you get it under control, and then it goes up a level. And you get that under control, and it goes up another level. And it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Geez, you can hear there about the pain of these jellyfish stingers. Jesus. You know, I would not want to get stung by one of these things. That is horrific. I'm just going to play another clip now in regards to the Irukandji jellyfish in Australia. Australia is the Australian natural world is so vicious that people couldn't even comprehend it. Tourists come here and they're told about crocodiles, they're told about snakes, the deadliest snakes in the world, and spiders in the world, they're told about great white sharks, they're told about all sorts of creatures that can kill you in this country and sting you and bite you and all of this and attack you or whatever. So tourists go around and they swim in these areas because I've just been up there and there are kind of warnings up that far where I was in far north Queensland, but a lot of tourists aren't being told about these little stingers. I think it is a threat to the Australian tourism industry in these parts of the world, in these parts of the country. Indeed, but a lot of people aren't warned and they go to swim in these areas and they're told about crocodile threats or great white sharks or other sharks and things like that or snake bites, but they're not told about these marine stingers. And for the size of this thing, being the size of a thumbnail, that it can inflict so much pain and agony onto someone and even kill them. You know, there's been kids stung. I was reading an article about a girl that was stung and went into an induced coma. She was vomiting blood. You know, I was reading about tourists getting stung in areas that are supposed to be pretty safe around the Barrier Reef and being airlifted to hospital, suffering from heart failure. You know, it gets into your brain and causes all sorts of clots and problems there, you know, so it's a bit of a worry. But this clip here is just talking about how they're spreading south from the tropics down into just general Queensland beaches. So they're saying that they're experiencing a real boom with these things.
19 people have been taken to hospital with suspected Irukandji stings in Queensland so far this season, which is almost double the 10-year average. Tonight, a rescue helicopter has arrived at Fraser Island to treat two more people with suspected Irukandji stings.
Fraser Island is a postcard destination, but beachgoers are warned there are deadly Irukandji jellyfish in the surrounding ocean. Yesterday, two people were flown to hospital with suspected marine stings. And in the past 2 weeks, a total of 8 people have been evacuated from Fraser Island by rescue helicopter because of this 1 centimetre long animal.
It's not fun. 10 out of 10 on the pain scale, nausea, vomiting, difficulty breathing, profuse drenching sweating, a feeling of impending doom.
Dr. Lisa Gershwin from the Marine Stinger Authority says on average there are 10 cases of Irukandji stings at this point in the season. But this summer there has been 19, and they're not limited to the Fraser Coast.
This has been an amazing season. There's no real hot spot this year. We've had stings in the Whitsundays, multiple stings there. We've had numerous stings in the Cairns region. You know, we've had stings all up and down the Queensland coast.
The recent hot weather and onshore winds are contributing factors, but they're not the only reason for the spike. Dr. Gershwin says there have been low numbers of Irukandji in the past few summers, so it's natural for them to have a boom year.
You think about the flowers in your garden, and, you know, from year to year they vary. Some years you get a lot of flowers, some years you barely get any flowers, and, you know, jellyfish are the same way.
In the southeast, the common blue-bottle jellyfish are washing up in their hundreds.
It's much worse than last year. Every day over all the beaches on the Gold Coast, there's hundreds and hundreds. Each beach you could easily have between 100 or 200, and we have almost 40 beaches open every day.
The hermaphrodite packs a nasty sting and can be serious for people who are allergic to bees or wasps.
They cause a lot of trouble. They really hurt. There's not much we can do to prevent them.
With northwesterly winds expected to continue until the end of the week, armadas of blue bottles are likely to keep washing up along the Queensland coast.
Yeah, I mean, Irukandji sting is going to, you know, be a lot worse than the blue bottles, if I just take that down. But you're talking there about you know, the Fraser Coast in Queensland, that's a good 1,000 kilometres to up to the tropics in Cairns. I mean, that's a long way down. I mean, this is near the Gold Coast, which is a massive tourist, very popular area on the Queensland Gold Coast there. The big buildings kind of looks like a little Miami. That's a long way south, and they're finding them down there, and they're finding these stingers, these box jellyfish variety stingers in also around Brisbane area. Around there and on the coast outside there, so Sunshine Coast and all of this. So there's some professors and stuff, I was reading some articles, and they said that in their lifetime they could find these stingers down on the Sunshine Coast of Queensland. So that's very far south, and they're very rogue. You know, they could be anywhere and spread anywhere, so you don't know when you're going to run into them. So this is another problem we have in this country with the natural environment. It's really crazy. Seems like everywhere you go in this country, you're being bitten and stung, you know, and you go up to these regions, in these tropical regions, and it's just so beautiful, but you can't touch anything because it can be so deadly. So that's a real worry, and it's just like in Jaws, isn't it? Have anyone seen the original Jaws movie where there's shark attacks and the mayor of the local town doesn't want to shut the beaches down because it's the tourist season? And I bring up this because I'm just wondering if these things start heading south into, you know, very popular areas of Queensland when they haven't been seen before, then this is going to be a massive issue. It really is. Indeed, and I got an article here that says a sting from this tiny jellyfish will make you beg for death. The sting of this tiny jellyfish is so horrific that you might just ask your doctor to kill you, and they're not kidding. Evidently, there's this with sufferers who have been stung by these jellyfish, in all the agony and all the pain and everything that they're going through, there's this impending sense of doom that they're researching with people who've been stung. And I think that's because the venom of these jellyfish is so toxic that it's getting into every part of your body, and your body's basically telling you that this is, I'm going to die, that I'm going to clock out now. And so people get, they panic, you know. I mean, imagine that, biting a poison apple. Imagine you're just going about your day and you you get stung or you bite into something and it's going to kill you, you know, the feelings that you go through. So it's a scary sensation. And it's not like, as I said, it's not like you're swimming and you get stung, ouch, you know, and then the pain's immediate. Sometimes you don't even know. It might feel not even like a little bit of a prick from a mosquito. And then 10 minutes later, you're vomiting blood. So they're just talking about all these people that are trying to study these things and look into it. So Irukandji jellyfish is a blanket term for several of the most venomous box jellyfish species on the planet. And of course they're in Australia. And there's several of these bloody things. Their venom is 100 times more potent than that of a cobra. And you'll definitely feel it. 100 times more potent than a cobra. Initially, the sting is relatively mild, if anything, like a mosquito bite. But after about 30 minutes, and this happened to us, this happened to us, I got a little sting there. You'll want to make your way to the nearest hospital as quickly as you can, and you'll want to be heavily medicated for at least 12 hallucinogenic hours. The minuscule amount of venom released from the jelly stingers induces excruciating muscle cramps in the limbs, severe back pain, horrendous headaches, relentless nausea, terrible stomach pain, vomiting, and terrible burning sensations in the skin, and cardiac complications, among other symptoms. So it messes with your heart, and you can have a heart attack and die, collectively known as Irukandji syndrome. And is, as if that weren't bad enough, it also triggers a dreadful feeling of anxiety and a sense of impending doom. So Australian biologists are here telling the media patients believe that they're going to die after they've been stung by these things, and they're certain of it, that they'll actually beg doctors to kill them just to get out of the pain. It gives you an incredible, unbelievable lower back pain that you would think of as similar to an electric drill being drilled into your back, into your spine. It gives you relentless nausea and vomiting over and over again. How does vomiting every minute to 2 minutes for up to 12 hours sound incredible? It gives waves of full body cramps and profuse pain and sweating. The nurses have to wring out the bed sheets every 15 minutes. It gives you great difficulty in breathing, where you feel like you're suffocating and you can't get your breath. It gives you this weird muscular restlessness, so you can't stop moving, but every time you move it hurts. It's like one of those terrible viruses where you can't sleep, and you can't, every time you roll over it hurts. It's like that on steroids. So there just doesn't seem to be any kind of help here. So a creature like this is capable of inflicting such excruciating pain. In the Irukandji jellyfish is surprisingly tiny, with bells measuring an average of only one cubic centimeter. Their four tentacles, however, can range from several centimeters to 1 meter, 3 feet. They also completely transparent, so you can't see them, making them very hard to see. And they're saying don't worry, because they're found mainly in the warm northern waters of Australia, up in the tropics. But as I said, they're moving south. And you know, so that's it. This is something, folks, you do not want to get stung by. And this is all in the waters up there. And it's such a beautiful place, but it's like deadly in the water. You know, all the beaches, and the nor'easterly winds hit up there, and it just washes them all in. And you know, I don't even think in the swimming nets. I don't actually think they should have those swimming nets open, because people had unprotected babies in there just splashing around, because they feel safe because the nets are up and there's a lifeguard there. The lifeguard I saw was pretty young and not very prepared, and I challenged him with a few comments, and he just didn't know. But the, you know, those nets protect from the bigger box jellyfish, but they don't protect from these little Irukandji who can go right through, and people are swimming in there with their kids. So it's this could spell a disaster for the tourism industry indeed. So a real worry anyway. Coming back on the plane was really interesting, and being around and just traveling and taking my notes and everything like that, I noticed, and I noticed just this Christmas with a lot of kids around here and talking to a lot of kids around seven in primary school and stuff, they're all getting iPads for Christmas. Every single one of them, they're getting an iPad, they're getting an iPad, they're getting an iPad. Anyway, we have a little one, she's just turned four, and we get on this plane trip to go there and come back, which is about 2.5 hours or whatever, and it's a whole day. It's a whole day. You got to get out to the airport, you got to park, you got to get on the plane, you got to wait for the plane. Sometimes they're delayed, you got to get on, you got to go off. And we have to manage our little one, who doesn't use iPads, obviously, or iPhones. Or she's never seen TV, so she doesn't, you know, we don't allow her near any of that. And so on the plane, we get on there, and I see this family in front of us. There's a mom and a dad and two kids, and the girl's probably about 8 years old, 7, 8 years old, and the boy's probably about 5 years old, and they're watching the iPad with all these Netflix movies on there, you know, that they've downloaded. They watch it from the moment they sit in the seats. None of the family, like four of them, never spoke to each other. They never said a word to each other. They just sat in their seats, and that was it for the whole trip. And the kids just looked into these iPads, and they just watched these movies, and I was sitting behind them. And these Netflix movies were just like extremely colourful, short episodes, just boom, 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 like a seizure. And the kids were just staring at them, not even blinking. I was looking through the crack of the seats, you know, and it just blew me away, the parenting skills now. What is this, you know? And we've got to get on the plane. We've got to manage our little one. We've got to get in the seat. We've got to, you know, read a few little things, magazines, go to the takeoff, look out the window, look at the sights below, and it gets up in the air, and we've got to maybe read a book or two. Then we have to have some snacks and do that and some drinks. And then we read some more books, might go for a walk up and down the plane. After about 2 hours, they get a little bit cranky and stuff like that. So we've got to manage that the old way, give them a bit of cuddle, give them a bit of hug. And not these people. They just get on the plane and they don't want you to bother them. You know, they don't want your child to scream or yell or get upset because their child isn't, because they're looking at an iPad. And this mum was sitting there with the lips and the parenting book with the coffee. They carry their coffees around. Have you seen this? People carry their coffees around like trophies. They hold these styrofoam cups up with coffee in them and they hold them up like a trophy and they walk around all day with the fucking thing. It's like, is there any coffee in there? Is it cold? Is that some kind of code? Do I have to have that coffee and hold it up in a certain way to be part of the tribe? I don't drink coffee. It gives me hemorrhoids and acid reflux and all sorts of problems. It makes me angry. And anyway, they're on this plane and it's just unbelievable. And I noticed when I was away, I saw this lady, an Aboriginal lady, because there's a lot of Aboriginal people up there in Northern Australia. Wonderful people too, but there was this big Aboriginal lady and she had this little kid. And she's stuffing this bottle in its mouth. It was only maybe a year or so old. And it was getting a bit fidgety, and it was honestly within not even a minute of that child starting to get a little bit upset, and this was in the public swimming pool at the park, she whacked out an iPhone out of nowhere, just whacked this iPhone out, gave it to the little bubba, and the little bubba started pressing it, and that was it. It was all done. It's a vegetable state. And I'm like, wow, that's what modern parents do now. I mean, not everybody and people who listen to this, I know. I'm just saying in general, watching people, it's like now there's no parenting kind of old school parenting skills anymore, is there? It's like, you know, the child starts to get upset or a bit, rummaging around and won't sit still or cries or whatever, and the phone comes out, the iPad comes out. What happened to giving kids cuddles or feeding them or taking them on a walk or showing them some things or reading a book? There's none of that anymore. It's amazing. They just whack out this technology and give them and put that in their hand, and that's their parenting skills. And I saw these children on the plane. The father never spoke to them. The mother never spoke to them. The two kids never spoke to each other. And the whole trip on this plane, 2.5 hours from takeoff to landing, and I'm talking when the plane actually landed, and when the captain tells you to turn off, that you can take your seatbelts off, they still were on this iPad watching these Netflix movies. I mean, the entire trip, none of them even, these kids didn't even blink. They were just looking at this iPad. They didn't even speak to the dad. And we're managing our little one, where I got some Play-Doh for her, I got some books, so we read lots of stories, I got lots of different snacks, you know, little drinks, little things to open up, little stuff, little chats, conversations, look out the window, we're taking off, we're landing, go up the back of the plane, have a little bit of a walk, a little bit of a cuddle again, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, managing our little one, who's really good anyway. I'm just saying, you know, it's on a plane, it can be into a few hours and they start to get a bit upset. It's hard being up there on a plane. I don't really like flying. I feel really uncomfortable. And but you know, these parents now, you know, I say they go for a drive up the coast, they just put the kids in the back and they got these bloody videos at the back of the seats and they're watching all these movies now. And they get on the plane, they just watch the iPads. I guess that's the parents, they've done their job, it's all over. And I just look at these people and I think, my God, you know, it's unbelievable and this is how things must be. But I just find people really ignorant now and it's really annoying me. And I just, and that's, you know, I mean, so many people now are not into what I'm talking about now. They're not into what I'm doing and what the listeners out there are doing. We're trying to go through all this information. They're not interested in any of this at all whatsoever. They just don't care about it. And I'm thinking, you know, should we bother waking up these people? Should we bother handing them some information? Should we bother talking to them? If we try to talk to them and they're not interested, they tell us to piss off. Do we get upset? Are they our brothers and sisters? Should we have a lot of mercy and patience with these people who just don't care about what's really going on around them? I don't know. And it kind of reminded me of this clip from the movie The Matrix, which is pretty interesting, about the people going around when they're in the simulation.
The Matrix is a system, Neo. That system is our enemy. But when you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters, the very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. You have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it.
It's really interesting, isn't it? We've talked about that before, that so many people are so embedded in this system that they will fight to protect it. And that, of course, is called Stockholm Syndrome, where captives bond with the captors, you know. And that's what happens in Australia, you know. We're getting that a lot. I talk about it a lot. This capture bonding sort of syndrome through Stockholm Syndrome, it's called. And that's what it said in the movie The Matrix. There's a lot of great clues and a lot of great things said in that Matrix movie, I've got to say. You know, how people identify with their rulers, and they will fight you to protect the people who are ruling over them, and keeping them down and keeping them from thriving and being who they're meant to be. To be true humans, you know, and I think about that, and I look at these people on the planes, and I think, why do I even bother? I should just shut them out of my life. Am I being negative if I do that? What do you do if you have family members who just won't listen to what you have to say and think that you're some conspiracy tinfoil hat wearing nut job? What do you do when you just can't communicate with friends or family or those closely around you? What if you can't, talk to people like I am now? That's why I like doing the podcast. It's important. But so many people are just not interested nowadays. And I just see these families get on a plane and they just plug out from each other. It's not even like they know one another. And there's just these kids watching these black devices with this craziness going on there. And I'm looking at the father. He's unconcerned. And I'm like, you're not concerned with what your kids are watching right now. That's garbage. It's trash. Why are you letting your kids? Why don't you do something with them? Why don't you play games? Those kids are old enough to play some games. And the girl kind of looks sad in a zombie sort of like way, you know, in a sad sort of zombie way, you know. It's like, what are they supposed to think as kids? Like, my parents aren't willing to spend any time with me on a plane for 2.5, 3 hours, you know, and I've just got to stay here. I mean, as a father, I just try to do so much with our little one, and it's constant work. It is draining. It's hard. It's not easy. It's hard to be a parent and do things the right way, old school way. It's hard, you know, and it's draining, and but it's all for them. It's not for me. It's not for us. It's for them. It's to give them the best start that you can so they can fly into their lives and enjoy their lives and be better people, be great people, and help and contribute to our side. But I'm wondering now, with all these people, you know, they're just so, they're so lost in the system, and they just think they're doing the right thing, and they'll fight to protect it. And I wonder, should we bother with them, you know? Does it make us bad people because we don't want to deal with them? You know, why should I have patience for these people? I'm not going to fall for the whole hippie love thing anymore, you know? I'm just going to cut these people out of my life, but I'm also going to research and I'm going to study them, I'm going to watch them in these kinds of situations, because I think it's really important to do so, you know, to see what they're doing so that I can better myself and the people around me from this knowledge as we move forward. So it was an interesting trip in that way. But being away and going on planes or being on buses or being on transport and just being around families and holiday people, it's just amazing to see how many kids are just constantly on these iPads and phones and watching people on the beaches and around the pools and going everywhere and just watching people walking on the streets nearly in front of cars on these devices. Watching them tap their fingers and move their arms and just so fidgety all the time. Every 5 seconds, I saw this lady jogging with a guy. They were both jogging, and the guy's flexing his muscles, and he's got his little togs on, and he's got his tan and his body oil lubed everywhere and dripping off him, and they're running, and they stopped at the lights, and they were kind of jogging on the spot, waiting for the lights to cross, and they both whipped out their phones. Jogging on the spot, looking at their phone, doing a quick texting, and the phone cuts back in, and then they cross the road. I'm seeing this with kids everywhere. I sit there and I watch these kids, like teenagers, and they're on the beach or something, for example, and they just can't leave these things alone. You watch out there on the buses or wherever you are on the streets and around. They're just constantly pulling it out. They'll put it back in. They'll pull it out. They'll put it back in. They'll pull it back out. It just dominates their entire lives. It's just incredible. And I saw probably the worst that I've ever seen, because up in that area of Cairns in the north of Australia, there's a lot of Chinese. There's Chinese everywhere. It's just so many Chinese. I've never seen so many bloody Chinese in my goddamn life. And these Chinese girls, a lot of like younger girls, quite attractive, very chalky, skinny, chalky looking skin, black hair, you know, and they're walking around on these phones. And I watched some of them. They're actually walking up the street and going and walking around, looking through their phones. They're actually filming as they're walking. So they're holding the phone in front of their eyes and they're filming the world as they're walking. And so they'll go into the pool and they'll go up to their waist and they'll come out and they're holding the phone up, and then they'll go and sit down and then they're still holding the phone up. It's like they're living their lives through a phone. Isn't that really weird? It's kind of some distorted, weird, disturbed virtual reality sort of scenario. And you see them walking around like zombies, and they're holding their hands up with the screen in front of their eyes. So it's like they're looking through the phone at the world in front of them. I saw them everywhere, and they can't even have a swim in the pool without taking their phone in there, taking selfies. So they can't put their heads under. They have to keep their arms above the water level so they can continue to film all the time. And I saw these people taking hundreds, multiple selfies, 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 selfies. And it's never right. They can never get the right shot because it never matches that ego. The ego's never happy. So they're just another one, another one, another one. And they're holding it up, another one, another one, another one. It just goes on all day. And it's like, hey, dickhead, you've just missed your whole day. It's going to do go dark soon. And you missed that whole beautiful day because you're worried about how you look in a selfie. And your ego's never going to reflect that self-image the way that you want it because it's never happy. So it wants more and more and more. That's why women do so much plastic surgery and people are so unhappy with themselves, because the ego will destroy them. It becomes a monster and it eats them alive. And just unbelievable seeing these people on holidays. I haven't been on holidays for a while. And being on holidays, it's like no one's living the holiday. They're not enjoying it. They're living through these phones all the time. They can't even go for a swim without the bloody phone. It was really amazing. So I was thinking, maybe in regards to the Irukandji, maybe some of these people deserve to be stung. Maybe it will wake them up a little bit, because it shows you how powerful nature can be. And that if you go in the waters up there, don't turn your back, because you can get stung by nature and nature will fuck you up. I'm telling you, man. And I kind of like that. I like how natural law rules in that manner sometimes, you know, where you've got to be careful still. It's really good to live in a country where you've got to be careful of the natural world around you, or you could get killed. And I kind of like that, like to think of things like that. I don't like living in these big city environments where, you know, the buildings and the concrete and the glass dictate to you how you should live, you know. I like being dominated by the natural world and having it around me, and that's a pretty crazy place up there. But interesting travels anyway, and seeing that, and seeing a lot of disconnection with families, how they're like, you'll see them having barbecues and stuff and they're all on the phone. You know, and I just didn't grow up like that, so it's very weird to see, just seeing like dozens and dozens of teenagers sitting around with the sun and the pool there, because they've got these big lagoon pools up in Cairns where I went, and it's pretty nice. It's the council do, you know, use money well up there, and they actually put these nice things in, and people are all sitting around the pool, just phone, everybody's on the phone. It's kind of like some weird science fiction movie sometimes. Everybody's living their lives through their phones. It's really amazing to see, and it was really quite annoying, actually, and so I just, you know, I just walk straight through them now. If they don't get out of my way, I walk straight through them, but I'm starting to see these people, like Morpheus was saying in The Matrix. You know, they're still so embedded in the system that that makes them our enemy, I think. And I don't mean that as an enemy, as that we've got to attack them or anything. I just mean that we probably just need to shut them out of our lives and be around people that we can connect with. Even if we have to find new friends, we have to be around people that are on our side, that are on our wavelength, and we have to communicate and stay close with them and do it that way, because these people are just crazy, really, honestly. These Chinese people are absolutely out of their mind with the technology, you know. And another thing, just before I go, what I was seeing is every single, like, Korean that you see, even young children, like 2 and 3 year olds, like, and Koreans and Japanese and Chinese, like these people, because they're so addicted to the technology and the screens, all of them have glasses. I've noted that, and bad eyes. I've noticed it everywhere. Just every Asian person that I saw had glasses. It's absolutely amazing. They're all wearing glasses, no matter how young they are. And so the screens are destroying their eyes, and that was really amazing. And they just don't leave these things alone; they're just permanently on them. It's crazy. I'm seeing some of them that were carrying around these phones that were bigger than the phones that we can buy in Australia. They probably bring them from China or Japan. These phones were like carrying around a bloody telephone book. This guy had a phone that was almost the size of a telephone book. You know, and he couldn't even hardly carry the thing; it was so big. You know, that's got to be destructive. And of course, they've got them on their laps. They've got them around their genital areas. They're just permanently on there. And I was really fascinated to see these modern parents now. As soon as the child has a little bit of a whinge or a little bit of a problem, instead of giving them a cuddle or distracting them or taking for a walk or showing them a look at this bird or look at this butterfly over there, or let's go for a swim, let's go and get an ice cream. You know, let's go and do this, let's do that. You want to read a book. They're whacking out these phones and chucking a phone in their lap, and they're just poking around with a phone, and the parents done their job. I just don't understand this. I don't agree with it. And I think these people, they're just my enemy now. And they can, if they want to continue like that with their lives, then continue. I can't stop them. And I'm not going to stress about it. I just don't want them around me. And I'm going to start chopping these people out of my scenery, out of my existence. And I'm just going to move move through in my own way and do the best I can. But great to speak with the members today. Hope you are enjoying. Have a great new year. I'll actually be on with Corey tomorrow morning, I think, just to cover what we've talked about this year and in the year with another great podcast. That'll probably go out on the RSS feed, but I'll always put those ones up for members first for a few days as well. But lots of podcasts to go over, lots of info on the websites. Keep tuning in. I've also changed, I've just made the comments section on the website a bit bolder. You can see the scrolling comments bar there. So please comment away to articles and put comments in the chat room. Your comments on the front of the website are in bold red now, so it's pretty goddamn bold. But the public, and there's thousands on that website a day, we've been getting some great feedback from some of the podcasts as well. People can see and read those comments and click on them, so you know, turn it into a little bit of a blog. I've had some weird commenters on there I've had to deal with lately, so it's freed it up a little bit, and you're free to comment on there and comment about the podcast that I'm doing, leave any links, talk about the articles that are going up, whether you agree, whether you don't agree. That's what it's there for. And just again, before I go, thanks to the members for plugging in and continuing to be a member on my website. I hope you're enjoying what we're doing here, and stay safe, and we'll chat again on the next podcast. Take care.